Reading for today comes from Ephesians chapter 5, verses 21 through 33. And this is one of those wonderful passages of the Bible that people just don't read anymore because it doesn't really vogue very well with modern culture. Submit to one another out of reverence for Christ. Oh, that one gets people in trouble already. Wives, submit to your husbands as to the Lord. For the husband is the head of the wife, as Christ is the head of the church, his body of which he is the Savior. Now as the church submits to Christ, so also wives should submit to their husbands in everything. Husbands, love your wives, just as Christ loved the church and gave himself up for her, to make her holy, cleansing her by the washing with water through the word, and to present her to himself as a radiant church without stain or wrinkle in any other blemish, but holy and blameless. In the same way, husbands ought to love their wives as their own bodies. He who loves his wife loves himself. After all, no one ever hated his own body, but he feeds and cares for it just as Christ does the church. For we are members of his body. For this reason, a man will leave his father and mother to be united with his wife, and the two will become one flesh. This is a profound mystery, but I am talking about Christ and the church. However, each one of you also must love his wife as he loves himself, and the wife must respect her husband. May the Lord grant us better understanding of these words. A police officer pulled over a male driver who was with his wife, and he finds a couple who has obviously just gotten done with an argument. The man says, "Well, what's the problem, officer?" The police officer says, "You were going at least 75 in a 55-mile-an-hour zone." "No, sir, I was going 65. "Oh, Harry, you were going 80, and I told you you were speeding." The man says, "Quiet, honey." The police officer says, "I'm also going to give you a ticket for your broken tail light." The man says, "Broken tail light? I didn't know about a broken tail light." The wife says, "Oh, Harry, you knew about that taillight. I told you 2 weeks ago." The man with a pained expression on his face says, "Please, Matilda." The police officer says, "I am also going to give you a citation for not wearing your seatbelt." "Oh, I just took it off while you were walking up to the car," says the man. And the wife says, "Oh, Harry, you never wear your seatbelt. I told you you were going to get in trouble, and now you're it." The man loses it. "Shut your mouth, woman." Police officer says, "Ma'am, does your husband always talk to you this way?" She says, "Only when he's drunk." Now, we laugh at that, and we could totally see it happening. But it does lead to the question of, who does the wife think is going to be paying for those fines? And whose side is she on anyway? But I like to quote, now it's too bad that he went and got himself caught up in all sorts of stuff and sent to prison, but Bill Cosby had a really great skit on marriage. And he said, "Don't get your wife mad when you're about to get into the car, because she's not going to look at you and she's not going to talk to you and she hopes you have an accident. Your wife's not going to say a single thing if there's a truck that jumps the lanes and is coming head on right at you at 70 miles an hour and hits you. And then afterwards you go, 'Why didn't you say something about that truck?' 'Oh, you're so smart. You know everything.'" But we just read from, careful. We just read from Ephesians chapter 5, verses 21 through 33. And it's about how men and women in a marriage are supposed to submit to each other. And it has been read many, 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 many times since it's been written. I got nothing. Is it turned off?
Hello?
Am I loud enough now that everybody can hear me? Was I not loud enough before? Yeah, well, it doesn't come through on the recording very well. But it's been read many times since it was written down in Ephesians as to say, "Women, submit yourselves to your husbands. Husbands, you're free to do whatever. Go have fun." And that's not what it's supposed to be. Because Jesus didn't come to earth to just have a good time and be the head of everything and just rule the place. If he had done that, he never would have ended up on the cross. He never would have died for our sins. He would have just come down, propped his feet up on a throne and said, I'm the boss now. Which is what's going to happen at the end. But he gave us this time while, since he resurrected and rose up till the time that he comes back, to come to believe. Men in a marriage are supposed to be the head. Women in marriage are supposed to be the heart. Just as Christ loved the church, what did he do for the church? He died for the church. He came to direct it, to guide it, to show it the way it should go, and then die for it. And he says, women are supposed to be the other side of the same coin. Supposed to be the helper for the man in the things that he is doing, and the man is supposed to be the helper for the woman in the things that she is doing. But I have seen some wonderful recorded wedding ceremonies where they do the traditional vows. You've heard the traditional vows, right? I just love it when people write their own vows and they go through them and there's not a single promise made. That's why I insist if you're going to do a wedding and I'm going to officiate, you do the traditional vows because you have to at least promise something to somebody while you're doing it. But the traditional vows have this wonderful thing, you know, the man, are you going to love, honor, and cherish the woman? And the woman, are you going to love, honor, and obey? I have seen a couple of weddings where they got to that point and the woman went, nope. You take that last part out, Pastor. I'm going to love and honor, but that's it. And the problem is that our current society tells women need to be the head, the heart, the hands, the feet, and everything else. And then when they inevitably collapse under all the pressures of life of trying to be the super mom and the super wife and the super woman, and shoulder the load of 45 different jobs. If you ever read Proverbs 31, that's the superwoman right there. They try to shoulder the load of everything in the world, and then when they inevitably collapse, they blame it on the husband. He doesn't do enough. Well, you slapped his hand away from every single thing he tried to do. But you could probably turn me down, Marty. I sound really loud. Thank you. Men and women are supposed to be complementary, not adversary. If you've listened to a comedian in the past, 100 years, constant jokes. If you're a woman, you're talking about how bad men are. If you're a man, you're talking about how bad women are. And it's because we're different. And of course we're going to make fun of what's different. It's what we've been doing since we were 4 years old. We are supposed to be different. We were made different. We were made for different jobs. Now, I'm not saying that a woman can't be a firefighter and a man can't be a nurse or something stupid like that. And that a man can't play with Barbies when he's 5 years old and a girl can't play with Ken dolls or something stupid like that. I'm saying we were made to complement each other, to work together to fulfill the goal of marriage. Not one to lord it over the other, because even Paul says, the pagans lord power over each other. This is not how it's supposed to be with you. But for a long time, churches have proclaimed that men should be the lord and master of the household, up on his throne saying, I'm the boss. And the woman should be down there scrubbing the floors and having babies. And that was just a reflection of culture, of the way that it already was for the pagans outside. And so the church just proclaimed that that's how it should be for the Christians inside. And it was wrong. I am all for equality between men and women. But you need to understand that equality only gets you so far. Pretty soon you're fighting against what you're actually supposed to be doing. Paul says about this, just because I have Jesus, should I be allowed to just sit around and do nothing? Absolutely not. Paul is talking about whether he should work for his money or whether he should get paid in that part of 1 Corinthians. And he says, no, absolutely not. I need to be doing something. Why? Because I'm not going to be one to sit on my privilege. But men and women in a marriage. What does Paul say in this passage in Ephesians? He says, men, you need to be ready to die for your wife. And we can take that the full way. Not just die like I'm ready to jump in front of a bullet for my wife. Not just die like that, but I am ready to let what I want die for my wife. If I have something that I really like and it's going to get in the way of our relationship, I'm ready to let that die. I told her a long time ago, I like playing around on my computer. I have a very nice computer. She bought it for me for Christmas. It's a nice setup in my office over at the house. And I said, if this ever starts getting in the way, if I'm spending too much time on here and not enough time with you, if it's distracting me from what I should be doing with you, I can put it out on the curb like that.
No.
That is awesome. What? Oh, I can put it out on the curb. No, I don't put it on the curb. I throw it up in the air and then we hit it with a baseball bat. All right. Although that will really mess up the resale value. But, you know, that's what Jesus is saying about our relationship, not just with our families, but with Him. Jesus said you have to die to yourself. I heard it another way. Another pastor said it. Said Jesus really wants to kill you. He wants to kill the part of you that takes you away from Him. He wants to find those dead branches, those parts of you that are hanging off and have no purpose other than to drag you down, those chains that bind you to the earth, and He wants to cut them off. To kill the parts of you that take you away from His purpose for you in life. And that's what marriage is supposed to be. You're supposed to be putting on those rings, saying those vows in front of God and your family and the pastor or the justice of the peace or whoever. And you are supposed to be pruning yourself through that of the things that take you away from God. Women also have a responsibility in this. And that's one of the weird things, is that our society tries to put all the responsibilities and none of the responsibilities on women at the same time. Saying, you are not responsible for anything. You are free to be who you want and what you want. And here is exactly how you need to do all the laundry, all the dishes, cook all the meals, raise all the children, take care of everything in the household, and have a job. And then they wonder why people are, you know, spontaneously combusting all over the place. Men must be willing to die for their wife and to let their wants die. Women must be willing to give control of some things over to their husband and to live for him. That joke that I said at the beginning where the woman is, obviously they just got done fighting about something and she is ticked and she is mad at him and she is going to throw him under the bus in front of this police officer. Darn the consequences. Is that woman, well, either of them, the man is obviously lying about several things, but are either of them being the picture of helping each other in that situation? No, I mean, it's fun to laugh about it, but no, they're not being good helpers of each other. In order for a marriage to succeed, and I know I'm talking about this from lack of experience, I've only been married for 8 years, and many of you have been married for well into the double digits multiple times, years. I could do that thing they do at weddings. Everybody put your hand up and put it down if you've been married 10 years, 20 years. Yeah. But we'd be here a while. In order for a marriage to succeed, you have to work together. You have to work together to solve the problems of life. And sometimes this can mean shutting up and letting him or her do the thing that they want to do. And sometimes this can mean being right there in the thick of it together. This doesn't mean that you're never going to have arguments. I was listening to Ken Davis. You know, he's a great Christian comedian. He had this thing about having arguments with his wife. And you can't imagine watching this guy up on the stage that he would ever have an argument with. He seems so soft-spoken and pleasant and funny. And he said he had somebody at one of his shows come up and say, my wife and I have never had an argument. We've never had raised voices. We've never even had a bad thought towards each other. And he said, you are married to a carrot. There is no way that you can be married to somebody and never have an unpleasant thought about the other person. It's just not possible because we've been made differently. Men and women are made differently, and they did a study in the United Kingdom, or they took scans of over 5,000 people's brains, men and women, you know, split it right down the middle pretty much. And they found out that that men and women have different shaped brains. We have massive amounts of similarities. Of course we do. We're both human. Some people might argue that. But men are from Mars, women are from Venus. Obviously, we can't be the same species. But we're both human. We're both made in God's image. In the Bible, in the book of Genesis, it says he made them male and female. But we do have differences. And what they found was, basically, I'm going to break it down to simple stuff. They found that the part of the brain that's on the outside, the wrinkly stuff, it's where most of the thought processing happens. Found that women have a bigger part there than men do. They process their thoughts better. This doesn't make you superior, ladies. But the parts that are inside are generally, smaller than the men's. And what they found that this made, that this is the conclusions that they drew, they said that women are better thinkers, but men are better decision makers. They did a study where they exposed people to different emotional situations, and they found that men, in those situations, one little spot in their brain would light up, the spot to solve that particular problem at that particular time. And then when the problem was solved, that spot would go away. In women, it would start there, but then like a lightning storm would go across the entire rest of their brain, activating every other thing in their head. And that's where the analogy comes from Mark Gunger. He talks about men have boxes. And when there's a problem to be solved, men will go to that box, open it up, look at the solution to that problem, and put it back, close the box. And he said, women's brains are like a giant ball of wire. And when there's a problem to be solved, you activate the electrode on one end, and it shocks through the entire system. And then once it gets to the other end, it comes out the other end with a solution, after having thought through all the memories and emotions and every possible thing connected to that problem. So this is why sometimes men can seem like they're laser focused on something and aren't thinking about what's going on around it. And it can seem like women aren't focused on that thing at all. They're focused on all this stuff. Because we approach things differently as men and women. Because God made us that way. Because a man can be like, all right, I can fix that. Just give me a wrench. You know, I can fix that one thing. And the wife can go, but if you fix that one thing, these other five things will break. And the man might never have seen those other five things because he was so focused on the one thing. This is one of the reasons that they say men, if they apply themselves even in fields that are generally thought of as women's fields, they rise to the top really fast because they're problem solvers. But women, when they approach things that men do, rise more slowly but will rise more comprehensively, as in having a better understanding of all the pieces that go together. I mean, just talk to the head of Xerox or Pepsi Cola. Both companies run by women. They're CEOs. Neither of these makes one or the other superior. They are complementary. They work together to make those things work. In the analogy I just made of the man trying to fix one thing, but other things would break. If they work together, she can point out the problems, which can be seen as nagging, while he fixes the problems. This is if the guy is technically proficient. If it's a car problem, I'm giving it to Bud because I don't know what to do. And Bud will give it to some other mechanic who has more time and gets paid. Women are generally better at understanding emotional situations where men are better at application situations. This is the conversation that I'm sure every married couple has had if they have these conversations where the wife comes in, she wants to explain a problem to her husband. And the man immediately jumps in, well, this is what you have to do. I do this all the time. Katie hates me for it. and then she says, no, I don't need the problem solved. I just want to talk about it. Because it's the process of understanding. the process of getting all the emotional things. And the man might as well have been walking in with the Gordian knot and shing, right through it. Did he solve the problem? Yes. Was it the solution we were looking for? Probably not. And people may think, well, with these differences, with men and women being having their brains be different, I mean, our bodies are naturally different. I can look at Carol and Chubby and notice that there's one of them's a woman, one of them's a man. It's pretty obvious. We were made totally differently. Our musculature is different. The positioning of our internal organs is different. The way our glands work are different. The biochemical processes within our body are different. The size and shapes of our brains are different. A lot of it is very much the same because, like I said, we're both people. We're both human beings. And thank goodness our differences aren't nearly as pronounced as other things in the world. And we were talking about it at dinner last night, coming back from the Renaissance Festival with the Kinsey family. But have you ever seen a picture of a male and a female spider? The female spider is like this big, and the male spider is like that big. And the females are the ones that you picture when you picture a spider. They got the big butt. They are the ones that make the webs and everything, and the males are these tiny little things that you barely even notice. Vastly different organisms. Humans are not so nearly different as things that are in the insect world or in the animal kingdom. You can tell a male lion from a female lion really fast. They're very different. Men and women look different. We have different parts, but we are two sides of the exact same coin, meant to hold each other up and to help each other in all things. Marriages can be fraught with controversy because we're different. But as long as we are working together, as long as men are willing to die to themselves and die to Jesus and die to their wives, they will hold it together and show love to each other in all these things. I didn't mention love yet. You think love might have something to do with marriage? Well, you know what? Strangely enough, if you go back, yes, I'm going off on a tangent, and I know we're already at the end of the service, but if you go into the way that marriages used to be done, and are still done in many places, arranged marriages. Arranged marriages where your spouse is picked for you by your family, or by the village, or something like that. We think that it's this terrible, barbaric practice. It's the way that it was done in Jesus' day. For the most part, around the Jewish people, is how they did it. And you didn't fall in love. You probably knew the person that you were going to get married to. You might have, you know, looked at each other and thought, hey, he's not that bad looking for a 40-year-old guy when I'm 16. That's the way it was done. But strangely enough, even in current societies that do arranged marriages, the divorce rate is less than 2%. Why? Because they're taught growing up how to be married. Now, I'm not saying this can't happen in American society where we pick people based on dating and love and, I don't know, what do they say on Match.com, you know, 43 matching characteristics or something like that. But I've never looked. Never had to. But we try to figure out this. Go to the library or search online for how many marriage help books there are, how many dating help books there are, how many self-help things there are on how to find a good person. There's an ocean of them. And it's because we still don't really understand love and we still don't understand attraction very well. We have people who are working on this around the clock for hundreds of years, and eventually all these monkeys are going to bang out the complete works of Shakespeare. But we haven't got there yet. We don't understand it. But God understood it way back. And he told us how to do it. And it wasn't about finding the right person to be your perfect complementary person. It was about having the right mindset and being a person who knew what you were supposed to do when you were in a marriage. Because these people didn't get to choose each other. They got this thing of saying, all right, we've picked Mary. We picked Joseph for you. You're going to go live with him for a year and do everything except for what produces children. Yeah, living together was a thing. And you, at the end of that year, we'll be wed. During that year's time, he will decide whether he likes you.
Sounds kind of crummy. But he will decide whether he likes you. But Mary had been brought up with this knowledge of here is how she was going to please her husband. Here's how she was going to work for her husband. Here's how she was going to live for him. And it meant being at his side, helping him in all these things, and making sure that his life was easier so that he could provide the loving comfort and care that he was supposed to do for her. Here's the equation. And it's what I talked about last week too. If you try to live for yourself, whether you're alone or you're married, if you try to live for yourself, you will end up losing yourself. The more you try to live for yourself, the more damage you do to yourself. If you try to live for your spouse, if you try to live for your spouse, you will only help them and through that help yourself. If you try to live for God, and you're married and both of you are trying to live for God, God will bind you closer together and give you the things you need. Because marriage is not about two halves of people coming together to make a whole person. It's not about two whole people coming together to make a whole person either, because none of us can be whole without Jesus. It's about two people coming together in the sight of God, and God makes them whole. There's the triangle analogy. The more you draw closer to the top, the closer you're going to get to each other. And that's how marriage is supposed to work. Love each other selflessly as Christ loved us. Amen.